are to a level that we may have to hit a little bit harder and make a little bit more investment in just to maintain reliability. And then with a goal of, you know, getting that down to a fairly levelized investment annually, we have 175 miles of transmission to cover. Obviously, there's areas that don't require clearing, and Clay and his team have been doing a good job reviewing GoPro footage to identify areas and gauge tree growth. And you'll be hearing more about that. But my end goal is to create a sustainable program that, you know, when we're all gone, that they're not cutting corners on the investment there, because as most folks in the power business know, the investment that you make in line clearing is directly tied to reliability, and it was actually one of the major causes of the big brownout back on the in the East Coast several years ago. So can't overemphasize the importance of that, but we're working really hard on that and hope to roll out that plan to the board when it's ready for prime time. Also, to compliment to Kay, she's still working behind the scenes on our new accounting program and has rolled out new dashboards for all of the managers and staff so we can efficiently work through that process. That's been very helpful. Segue just quickly to personnel. I've listed a few here. We've had a little bit of turnover for various reasons, retirement and people moving on, and we've been actively recruiting, and we've hired one new gentleman as our operator mechanic out at Swan Lake, and I think he's just an excellent skill set both on the electrical and the mechanical side. And I think it was a very good selection. And we're also setting up some. We've had some interviews for the we had the original SCADA network architect envisioned, and it was a little bit of a misfit because I don't think we were emphasizing that we really wanted people that were knowledgeable about power plants as well, because it's really key on how you approach things. And so I retooled that into a control systems engineer. And we've done some one interview under that job classification as well. And we've got another one queued up as well. So I'm hopeful that we can get these positions filled pretty quickly. We do have an operator electrician available out at Tyee, and we've had a pretty strong response for that actually. And I've got a stack of resumes on my desk that we'll be setting interviews for those up next week as well. So the recruitment's going fairly well. I will say that, and I've asked this question of other managers throughout the state and in the country, you know, how's their recruitment going? And I'll say with a resounding answer, almost all of them said that they've had to go and shift their approach to recruiters, because people just aren't actively out seeking jobs in the job market like they used to. And most companies are having a hard time bringing people in. So hearing that, I feel pretty good that we've got a good hire that's on his way, and he'll be here in another week or so. And we've got a couple of stacks of resumes that we're peeling through. So anyway, other people are having problems with that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to go ahead and hand it back to you, sir.
Thank you. Are there any questions in regards to the CEO report?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Chair, one quick question. I've seen the control systems engineer position that you guys resculpted, and really looking for somebody to meet those needs. Are we looking for a credentialed engineer for that position, or just is experience sufficient?
So I'll say that I'm a little open-ended on that question. And the reason is that, you know, my preference certainly is to get a licensed engineer. But with that said, if I found the right person that was plug and play, that had really broad experience that fit our organization and was the right fit, I would hire him. You know, we've got Robert as a licensed engineer on staff, and I would certainly prefer to get a licensed engineer to fill that open position. But, you know, I think it's all about having all the right people in the right chairs, as I often say. And I think we're pretty good on our team assessing people to make sure they fit the organization and feel the needs that we have. And one question that we kind of use as a little bit of a litmus is that, well, hey, if we hired this guy today, what could I hand him tomorrow and he could run with? And, you know, if the answer is, boy, I, out of our list of, 30 R&R projects that, yeah, I might be able to have him do one of these, he's not the right guy or she's not the right guy. So, or person. So it's those type of internal checks I do with myself and the staff here that that kind of help shape how we make those decisions. And if that person happens to be that, you know, I feel half comfortable handing off half of those projects to, well, that kind of shifts you in the right direction, doesn't it? So.
Thank you, sir.
Anybody else have anything for Trey? Thank you, Trey, for that. Brings us on to item 12, which is our staff report. We're at 2:18. Is anybody needing a short break? If not, we'll go right into it.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll just add that Ed's not on the line today. And so if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to take them on his report.
All right, so let's go ahead. We'll start with the staff reports and start with the power system specialist, Ed. And Trey, if you can give us a brief outline of what we see here. Pretty self-explanatory.
Well, I think it's a pretty straightforward report. Just kind of goes over Ed's projects that they're working on, some progress that they've made out at the plants. Not a lot of things that probably require much more explanation than Ed's provided in his report.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, I had a question.
Yes.
It may be not appropriate for this meeting, but I did have some engineering questions for staff with regard to some of the items that they're doing. Is it okay if I were to interact with them directly outside of a board meeting to ask those questions?
Sure, that'd be fine.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Anything that anybody sees here in regards to where we're at and what we're doing with this stuff? So, Trey, are we doing in-house training? And are we bringing outside resources to help with some of these training issues that we have before us?
So we've contracted with TSS to facilitate our training across both plants. So we've got, I'll say, a reasonably consistent approach across all of our plants for this training.
Okay.
And I said all your typical training. Yeah, you've got a certain amount that's required, and some of it's some supplemental training. And then anytime we find some areas that there's some gaps or maybe some, I'll say, skill set type training as opposed to safety training, then we try to merge that in there wherever we can.
Thank you. Anything else on that? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go to the Director of Engineering and Technical Services, Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First part of my report talks about the Swan Bailey Transformer refurbishment, and we've already gone through pretty much the whole gist of what that entails. Trying to get another 20 years of life out of the transformers, identified all the bushings that were starting to test poorly or nearing the core test phase. So we have actually just today approved a contract award. So that's a good thing. That project hopefully will occur and right now is scheduled to occur during the outage this summer. We typically schedule 10 days for Tai and 10 days for Swan and then 10 days for the SDI for maintenance every year. This year, on average, we usually only use 4, 5, maybe 6 days at each site, and we try and get the plant back up and get the communities off of their local generation, however that may be, diesel typically. But this year, we're probably going to have to use all 10 days for these transformers. They'll have to move to Swan, have a crew, full crew at Swan Lake, and a full crew at Bailey, working continuously for that full 10 days, and swap halfway through because there's also painting involved. So it'll be a unique and very fast-paced project, but like we mentioned, the benefits of it, and as presented in the when we the board approved it, there's a quite a bit of benefits out of doing this project.
So, Robert, in regards to that project, working in conjunction with Bailey and things, how is the lockout tagout on that managed in order to protect our contractors and our employees? Because you got two sites that are involved in, I guess, coordinating services.
So for the lockout tagout on SEPA, from SEPA's perspective, we will have the complete 115 kV line locked out, tagged out, and we will have the 34.5 side. There's a switch on that side we can lock out and tag out. And as far as Swan goes, we'll have it locked out and tagged out at the Swan yard fairly easily. But with regard to coordinating with KPU, I think the main coordination we're going to be looking at is there on-site power available and can that we may be able to use instead of renting diesels to come out and do power. Other coordination may consider how do we make sure that we don't have contractors in the KPU side of the yard and maintain proper distances on the SEPA side. So that's still some coordination to be done. I'm waiting for, you know, once we award, one of the first submittals is going to be, hey, give me your detailed plan. What do you plan on doing? We'll take that and then we'll share with KPU Electric and we'll come up with a game plan on how we'll work together to ensure that the Bailey part of the project gets done in a smooth way.
That sounds good. Yeah, I'm always concerned about employee safety when we do these larger projects working with high voltage and in conjunction with other organizations. So I appreciate the update. Thank you.
Absolutely. Swan Lake Station Service, again, was mentioned in the budget aspect of today's meeting where we had to shift a few funds from 2020 to 2021 and the budget, small budget increase there. As of right now, the equipment's manufactured 90%. We're having, you know, in the era of COVID, for example, the submarine cable project, we're having to do a factory acceptance test by Zoom. And so it's not ideal, but we can do this. We did a test run yesterday and you can do the Zoom. You could also, while they're doing the test, couple the Zoom with an actual on-site video recording so that we can make sure there's no shenanigans, and then pictures and a report. So we feel pretty confident that although we can't be there physically in person, there are measures that can be taken to ensure that SEPA is getting a product that we're paying for. Same thing is going to most likely happen with the Swan Lake Station Service as this equipment gets close to completion. It's not sometimes viable to travel these days to do a factory acceptance test, although this may be a little easier in terms of location than the submarine cable, which is in Japan. These are going to be located in Oregon. So that may be something that still is on the table, but either way, we have ways to accommodate for that. Swan Lake or the Stikine Crossing submarine cables, going amazing. We are in manufacturing right now, scheduled to do the factory acceptance test, namely here called the witness test, on March 24th. That's when the cable is pretty much complete, and we do all our electrical testing on it to make sure that the cable, as manufactured, is as advertised. Once that witness test is completed on March 24th, they will begin loading the cable, transporting it, and then get it on the barge for packing shipment to be sent to Vancouver, Washington. One thing to note, we did get an update, which was an excellent benefit to the agency, is when we put this out for bid, Sumitomo bid it, and we went through a lot of different negotiations on a joint where the cable couldn't be manufactured in one continuous length, and it would have an actual joint in the middle of it. And it would be a factory joint, so it's more like it was done in a controlled environment, and to most people, they wouldn't even be able to see it. But Siebel had concern about that joint, and so we went through great measures during the negotiation process to ensure that that joint was sufficient for A, the depth of water we may be placing it in, the bending radii that may be required during the installation, and just the robustness and testing of that joint. But we just received word from Sumitomo that they are able to utilize a factory that's opened up and mostly because they're really interested in the U.S. market. But they opened up a factory and they will be manufacturing the cable with no joints, which is an excellent, excellent improvement. So we'll have a single extruded cable that length is 18,000 feet. Plus 2,000 feet worth of spare. So that project's going well. Negotiating right now, Sumitomo and ITB are still negotiating on how they're going to get the diving done. They're also putting together their plan for local contractors to assist in what boats need to be rented and what equipment, because we still got to get heavy equipment. Questions on how those heavy equipment are landed, transported, and landed at each of the landings. Those are things that they're working out right now. But luckily, we got cable manufacturers looking good. Progress is being made. I'm getting like 10 submittals a day. We're working through those as fast as we can. So that project seems to be doing very well. I'm going to pause there and open it up for questions on that one, because I know that's a
pretty heavy topic. Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
Robert, did you say anything? Are we ready now on both ends, or where are you at in progress of the terminals and being ready for it?
That's currently in engineering design phase. I've already approved the some of the equipment that's going there, like the surge arresters, things of that nature. So that is currently in engineering. And so I suspect they will mob out. They'll probably mob out a couple months before they intend on bringing the ship to get that work done. And then you'll see that work will be complete, and then the ship will come in to do the actual lay. But so right now, they're still in design.
So you're guessing that that'll be done a couple months before the actual construction of your terminals?
I would suspect that's what they have. We don't have an official, this is a detailed schedule of manufacturing. We do not have the detailed schedule for installation yet. That is something that was due within 90 days of contract award. We're closing in on that, so I should know more here real soon.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
question to the chair?
Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to ask the question on the previous item. Good progress on this particular project, but was specifically with a question on the factory acceptance testing of our switchgear projects and future switchgear projects. Is that prohibition on doing in-person factory acceptance testing due to state mandates or manufacturers' requirements?
So it uses IEEE, AEIC recommendations. These are all SEPA requirements.
Let me ask the question differently. The ability for staff to participate in-person factory acceptance testing, is that prohibition the manufacturer's request or destination state mandates?
I don't know. It's Japan. I would have to look. It was just prudent to figure out a different way, and we both, Sumitomo and SEPA, in a meeting, we decided it would be best to do that. Plus, our expert, our cable submarine cable expert is in Canada. So Robert, that being said,
I apologize. The question was specifically with regard to station service switchgear and future switchgear projects.
So I can address this one if you'd like, Robert.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just to put it into some context. So I think, you know, we've been approaching these type of issues, I'll say, with an abundance of caution. You know, it's been, as you guys know, it's been a moving target. People have been changing. It's been a very dynamic process for whether a state's taking people or a country's taking people or what the requirements to get in and out are and such. I'll say from an overall perspective, on critical equipment, especially the high dollar items, that you would typically perform a factory acceptance test, which for some folks that aren't familiar with the FAT term, as you would travel there, you would witness a certain percentage of certain types of tests, end to ends or voltage tests or this, that, and the other. And so we prefer to do those anytime that we can. But we're also kind of very sensitive at this time to, you know, the challenges around COVID. So far, none of the manufacturers have said don't come. Japan, obviously, is a little bit more difficult, especially if there's some prolonged quarantine elements there. I think it's we've been pretty innovative there and have found other ways to approach that. You know, the cable testing, usually it's a few tests, you know, whereas a control center or some other hardware where, you know, there might be many endpoints where you'd typically send somebody there for a couple of weeks to witness multiple things. Are handled a little bit different. So I'm fairly comfortable with what we're doing right now, Jeremy, and in the future, and even on some of the stuff that Robert's talking about, some of this equipment, we still may bounce down and do a quick check. I think it's a good thing. It keeps the factory honest. At a minimum, we hold them off right up till the very end. So, you know, they're kind of on alert that, hey, you know, the owner could be here, and it kind of keeps everybody honest. But our philosophy is to perform FAT tests.
I understand that we're definitely in an interesting time and period with COVID. I'm just and I'm not second questioning staff in any way, but I think that our ability to go do factory acceptance testing specifically with things like switchgear is a tremendous value to our engineering and our senior technician staff. And we don't get an opportunity for our staff to go do much of this. And it's not just a matter, in my opinion, of just looking at the specific equipment we're getting, but it also is a great educational opportunity for industry trends, Any changes that are required, that may be required in the field, our correction at the factory save us a tremendous amount of money than after this thing ships. So I would highly support, and I would encourage the board to support a factory acceptance testing for items where we have the actual ability to do so.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. And I think we've got the money to do it, and it's our intent to do it wherever we can, Jeremy. So, and I would agree, I've done several fat tests all over the country and the world for that matter. I've been to Japan for a fat test before. So it is an invaluable experience for folks that haven't done it. And you are able to sometimes capture things that you didn't know existed. We had a module show up at one site that sat out there for a few months and got ready to install it, and opened up the doors and found out there wasn't any wiring done. So there's some horror stories.
So Robert, just for your information and logistics, I was contacted by an outfit that wants to come and work in Southeast Alaska next summer by the name of Bowhead Transportation. They have a large landing craft type facility. It has a capability of taking 10 passengers. I think it's a 400 ton landing craft. I think it's sitting in Juneau to date, big ramp on it, 5-foot draft. And so they're looking to start some work here in South.